This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning, Bahamas. You're tuned into Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It's 10 a.m. That means you're on the clock with Erin Green. Now, there are a number of ways you could tune into the show. You can stream us live, our audio and video, on guardiantalkradio.com. You can listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow Channel 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can text us on the Guardian Radio text line, 422-4796. That's 422-GR96. And it's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. You can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 326-4259. Now, it's Friday. That must mean it's a culture Friday. And I've got two of the country's best chefs in studio with me today to talk about the culture of food, of culinary culture, of gastronomical culture, and my favorite, the culture of fruits and sweet things. I think it's going to be a great show today. So I'm going to give you those call-in numbers again, 323-6232, 325-4316, or 326-4259. And while I have these guys in studio, I'm going to ask them some things about food because I need to straighten up on some of my cooking skills, right? I had to admit to somebody this morning that I am not a peas and rice cooker. And I know that I cannot find a man to marry me unless I could prove to him that I could cook a solid pot of peas and rice. I mean, that's the criteria, right, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peas and rice is the foundation, I guess, of Bahamian cuisine, you know.
Yeah.
If you come to the Bahamas, you got to have peas and rice.
And like, if I want to raise an army, a churin, I need to be able to cook a big pot of peas and rice and then figure out what I can put in that pot to satisfy their bellies, right? Without making them think it's a whole meal.
Now, peas and rice in New Providence, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's different from peas and rice in Kidd Island or Exuma.
Right. Did anybody
as
give
simple
Kidd
as
Island
that dish
people
is.
The permission to do that?
First of all, peas and rice in Kidd Island, if it's done right, mm-hmm. You're going to collect the rainwater. You're going to put a sheet over a tin and collect the rainwater. Let it come through the sheet.
Uh-huh.
You're going to pick fresh peas. You're going to put salt beef, tomato paste, no kitchen bouquet, all of the ingredients that you grow in the farm, and mm-hmm. You're going to utilize that.
They are herbs, right? So the first time somebody sent me to the store for herbs, right, I looked at them with my good QC education and said, so what do you need? Do you need oregano? Do you need dill? Right? Do you need celery? And they say celery, right? And then I say, what else you need? They say tomato. I say, but how is tomato a herb? They say onion, because they wasn't paying me no mind, you know. Then they say onion. And then I stop. And I said, you have confused me. I apologize. I'm from QC. And then they laugh at me. Why do we call these things herbs?
I think that's a part of our food culture. That's our, you know, that's how we speak. Right. Also, we call steam stew.
Yeah.
Which is really stew. We call it steam.
Yeah.
You that's know, what, like,
that's
like when you do
us.
Steam group, but that's really, you're really stewing that. So,
yeah. So when the woman say you have to confuse the enemy, that's what y'all doing. You protecting the recipes by not being clear about the ingredients. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I could be honest with you.
No.
Because if you're really interested in the thing, then you're going to do the required introspection.
Peas and rice, I equate as paella in Spanish. Because, okay. Well, a peas and rice pot actually is supposed to be a one-meal dish with everything in it.
Right.
Salt, beef, count, this, that, and the next. But since we've brought it to fancy it up, to give it to
tourists. Our guests from other countries.
We took out all of these stuff and just gave them the peas and the rice. But it's supposed to be a one-pot meal, like a paella.
Okay, pause. Let me introduce you. So in studio joining me today, you've heard the first voice, Chef Wayne Munker, joining us from last Friday's conversation. And the second voice is a new chef that I got somebody new to Teef Ideas from, Chef Alpheus Ramsey Jr. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Now, I had to introduce you like that because you stunned me just now, right? I, as a vegetarian, I call a peas and rice a one-meal pot because I want to put enough peas in there to be my protein.
Mm-hmm.
And so imagine my surprise. It turns out that that's what it used to be, and it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And then you want to, if you're getting the real peas and rice, you're going to do it in the, you know, those pots in the outside kitchen.
Yeah.
The pot that you don't really clean. A lady, I went to clean one of those pots before on the island. The lady told me, said, you can't clean those pots because they can catch the cold. So all the flavor is built up in that from your grammy, from her mother, inside that pot.
So you don't mess with that pot outside.
Okay, so when the old folks say you can't make this, they being real because you don't have the equipment. Like, you don't have the pot that has the time and the experience,
the history
etched into it.
Right, yes, right. Even those cast iron frying pans, because when I was growing up, my mother used to take a cast iron frying pan. She never used to wash that. That used to go in the oven with the oil in it.
Yeah.
But when you had to clean that, all you used to do is pour the dirty oil out and pour new oil in it. Or wipe it out with
a
cloth.
Wipe it out with a cloth. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Now, dear Bahamas, please call in and ask these guys some important questions, right? Because let me tell you, we have a national security incident or a risk happening right now. We are at risk of losing the traditional food cooking techniques, right? And we don't understand why we are unable to replicate these same flavors. Now, I'm a stickler for fried fish, right? And I was fortunate enough to have someone in my family circle who I would put money on as one of the best fish fryers in the country. And God rest her soul, rest in peace, Marina Sands Young, right? A beautiful woman, raised me up. And she took with her so many cooking techniques, you know? And one of the things she shared with me is how you make baked fish, baked grouper, taste proper, right? And when she said it, it struck me like it was sitting right there, you know, and I'd never thought about it. But I could never make my baked fish taste the same as hers. And as soon as she gave me that little tip, it was perfect.
So what's the tip?
Boy, look here, these boy them love your Bahamian people. So let me tell you what the tip is. The tip is that you start baking the fish first without the tomato. And you collect some of the liquid that's released
from the fish.
Look at these fancy people.
Yeah, natural juices.
Natural juices. And you collect that, and then when you are ready to put your tomato mixture on the fish, you pause and you put the fish au jus in the tomato mixture, and you let that cook down a little longer, and you add the flavor of the fish to the tomato.
That makes sense.
And that was the thing. Now, I'm not saying I could even touch Marina Sands, the hem of her cast iron pot. But it improved my baked fish tremendously.
Sense.
And then I realized that we are really at risk of losing the techniques.
Absolutely.
Right?
Like you want to, like for instance, that fish. You want to use fish with bone in it so you can get that gelatin and the flavor.
Right.
If you use fillets, it's not going to be the same thing.
Right.
So you have to use the head, you have to use the body, so you can get all of that flavor from the bone.
Now, Alpheus, you are a experienced chef, and you've spent a significant portion of your career working in the hotel industry, right? So I know in the hotel industry, we cater into tourists, and we cater into people who are not familiar or don't traditionally eat fish with bone in it, right? And we get now we got a lot of little Bahamian children who could look up in an adult's face and say, oh, do you have fish without bone in it? Yep. When I was a child, you were lucky if you got fish at a Sunday meal, right? And now children are expressing their right as Bahamians to eat fish with no bone in it. Is there a way that we could cook this fillet to cater to our tourist market, but still deeply impart the bone-in flavor to the vibe? Because if you're not eating bone-in fish, you're not experiencing the best parts of the Bahamas.
Right. Short story. When I was working in Bimini Road, we had fried fish and stuff like that, but we had the fillet. So one day I said, you know something? Let me just do a special. And I can do a bone-in fried fish. I ordered, because I didn't want to do too much. I ordered like 100 snappers. And by the time the fisherman got on top of the hill, I had to call him back and tell me bring back 100 more, because those 100 fried fish was already gone. There's a market for it, but I don't think the hotels feel the need to bring out that native Bahamian culture on their plates. Yeah. I don't know why. But I believe if we do it and do it correctly, it would make a big difference in the hotel sector.
Right. I think one of the ways we do it is we sell culinary tourism, right, to the hotels and to the Ministry of Tourism as a real product, right? We've looked at religious tourism as a real product. We looked at sports tourism as a real product, to the point where we invested or partnered with other countries to start building the facilities to do it. Do we have sufficient trained chefs to warrant a quota in the tourism sector for local chefs? A, and B, would that be a good way? See, for me, let the tourists at the hotels do what they want. I'm about food retention and food culture retention. Yeah. Would ensuring that every hotel has a team of local chefs directing the menu creation?
See, that's that last part. That's the issue there. Because when you have these creations of Bahamian concepts in the hotels and resorts around, you don't have Bahamian chefs driving the bus, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Bahamian chefs need to be driving it and doing it the organic Bahamian way. If I go to Japan and I ask for sushi, I can't tell the guy, put the sushi on the flat top and cook it a little bit for me.
And let me say,
he can be offended.
And you can't tell him, put a piece of plantain in the sushi for more.
No.
Yeah.
So we have to be proud of our culinary heritage and do it the way Grandma used to do it. Every chef, you know, he's doing it. He's trying to create and trying to give that guest a taste of his childhood, the way things were done when he was a child. Every chef is trying to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just coming on the show today, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about my childhood. And I lived down Carmichael Road for years. When you say Carmichael Road back in the day, after you passed Dawkins Gas Station, there was nothing else.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Nothing. But everybody had a backyard farm inside there. And I remember getting eggs from off a farm that were now what they call organic.
Mm-hmm. But we can talk about organic.
Yeah, and so, drinking tea, pear leaf tea, because we ain't had no Lipton tea bag.
Yeah.
All these authentic flavors and tastes. My mother used to bake bread and make guava jam, and these are the things I grew up off. When you was talking about switcher, I remember going in the back of the yard and getting the big, what we call them, big sour.
Yeah, sour orangeade.
Sour orangeade, and making lemonade. I used to drink that all summer.
In fact, I remember my housekeeper realized that we had access to a whole bunch of fruit where I live. And one day she stopped us and she's like, hold on, where are y'all going with all these guava? So we say, we're going to go eat guava and maybe make some guava. Look here, she took all our guavas from us and then proceeded to make batches of guava jam, some of which she took home so she could sell and use, and some of which we had to give out to neighbors and thing. And, you know, she made us realize that this ain't just your sustenance for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
This thing have value.
Yep. My grandfather, actually, he was a watermelon farmer. All the excessive watermelon that he had before they rotten, he would make watermelon jam and jar them. And that's why I created, when I did the Sun and Ice thing, I did a watermelon jam and cheesecake ice cream, which was, you know, a playoff of what he used to do.
Yeah.
So we could incorporate all these old-time Bahamian heritage and recipes in today's, you know.
In today's culinary scene. Look here, let me read three of these texts, and then let's talk about some of those old-time things we could bring back. So first text is, Aaron, this is your old math teacher. Took a long time to learn, years really, to make peas and rice, but I beat you to it. Well, look here, I gonna give you that, because I sure when I was in your math class, I pretended like I was the smartest thing going, right? But I'm glad you learned to do that. And for me, one of my bucket list things is I have to get these recipes, not just documented, but I got to get them under my fingertips so I could brag to the young people about how I know how to cook these things and y'all don't know nothing. next text, good morning. Tell your guests steam and stew is not the same thing. Now, I don't think that's what Chef Munko was saying. I think what Chef Munko is saying is that what we call steam, other people call stew.
In the culinary world?
Right.
If you look in the culinary, I was trained in John Chinoweas University in the Bahamas Hotel Training College. The true culinary definition of stew is what we call steam, is what you call, what we call stew is steam. So,
Yeah. Another text, Aaron, it's good these chefs are on. Two-part question for the chef. Does it make any logic and sense for a culinary student to take on a major chef position after culinary school? And should a chef take on a major position as an executive chef if they're not ready? Or, you know, should they focus? Some advice to young chefs about career options and placements, right? I think that's what they're asking for. What would be your advice to new chefs that are considering taking on major positions just coming out of school, right? And I guess they're asking, should you be bold and go for it, or should you really take time because culinary school may not necessarily give you everything you need?
Let me just say that it all depends on what they did before culinary school. Mm-hmm. Because one like me and Chef Wayne, we had an apprentice course, which took us through every major kitchen in what was Resorts International, which is Atlantis now. Before, at the age of 16, I was in those kitchens, going through. And by the time I hit culinary school, which was Johnson & Wales, I was about 20, 21, 22. So afterward, I think I could have taken an executive sous chef job at any place. So it's all what you do before entering like the thing. But if you just came out of high school and went straight into culinary school, I would say get some experience underneath your belt before you take on a huge position like an executive chef.
Man, look here, just a pause. Yeah. So I jumped right into the show this morning because I wanted to talk politics, right? And I was going to talk about the Senate and the people in the Senate and how we bastardize the Senate. Because, you know, in a similar way, we have been bastardizing traditional Bahamian recipes, right? And I just wanted to remind these guys that the Senate is a place for elder statesmen, not for neophytes, not for newbies, right? Now, you don't have to be a politician to be in the Senate, but it depends on the experience that you would have garnered, right, before you get to that spot. And so, dear politicians, I didn't want you all to think that I was ignoring you all this morning. I didn't want you all to get jealous because I got these other man in my studio talking about food.
To build off of what Alfia said, you want to have a strong foundation before you venture into executive chef because there's so much facets of an executive chef. You have to manage human resources. You have to know food costs. You have to know how to create menus, seasonal menus. You have to know a lot of different facets. Mm-hmm. So,
and
it depends on where you are too. If you're in a hotel, you have to know how to negotiate with unions. It's a lot of different things.
And what are you saying? And some of these things, you have to do this on like a blink and an eye. They come to you and say, I need a seasonal menu for the year. You have to, and they want it in an hour or in a half an hour. And you have to be able to send that. So if you are not seasoning menu creation, you could get lost easy.
All right. So I wanted to ask this question about culinary schools, right? Like I know we had Chimmy, which is a culinary institute connected to UE and COB, but I'm not sure if that's in operation anymore, right? So this is So this is a sort of a two-part story, right? Shouldn't the Bahamas then be hosting or managing and operating a culinary school? Like, haven't we reached that point yet? And then shouldn't we, with our intersection with tourism, shouldn't we specialize in gastronomy and culinary arts in the tourism sector? Like, is that a viable projection or aim for the Bahamas scene?
I think right now, I personally feel that we are leading the way in culinary in the region. For instance, we were the only country to send a team twice to the Olympics, Culinary Olympics, which is the highest pinnacle you can go to as a chef.
Yeah.
2004 and 2008, never have been done. That was history. So we always lead the way. And my colleagues, they would tell you when we went to a university, we always excel in university as students. Mm-hmm. We are always on top. So Bahamas is leading in the culinary field. I think you need more backing and exposure.
I think that the education wise, that we should have already been to that point where we have a hospitality school. When I mean a hospitality school, all facets, yeah. Front of the house, back of the house, plumbers, engineering, whatever, where they could just go to the school, and they run a hotel.
Right. And look, and so in the question here, right, looking at the intersection with the tourism industry, I thought about, we have so many different islands and so many different types of scenery, and then you just raised it for me, and so many different types of hotels, mm-hmm. right, that we would be a perfect place to build a model, right, for sustainable tourism education.
Yep.
Yeah.
When I went to BHTC, and that was from the CC Sweden campus, yep. during that time, we had people that came from all over the world, England,
all over the Caribbean. Tell me the name of the program. Would you call it B?
It was the Bahamas Hotel Training College, which was in the back of CC Sweden.
I got you.
Yes.
And we were in the apprenticeship program.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Apprenticeship program.
All right.
Which was a 3-year program. It was very thorough.
So we're not talking about building we're not talking about building new things. We're talking about revitalizing programs that have already existed in the country.
And which were already successful.
Right.
I could say.
And perhaps providing an environment where they could reorganize and restructure themselves to be more accessible to young people and people who are aspiring chefs.
Absolutely.
All right. So look here. I got a caller on the line. Let's go to that caller dead quick. Caller, you're on the clock. Good morning.
Good morning, chefs.
Morning, sir.
Morning.
I remember Chef Munro. I think it was Chef Munro.
Munka
from Resorts International.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work in commissary with Tony Thompson, right?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and
yes, sir.
You used to work with Chef Shea.
Yes, sir. I was his apprentice.
Right. So my question is, where did the culture of coconut milk come in with the peas and rice? When did that come in? And could you qualify that?
Well, I know in Andres, they infuse a lot of coconut in their cooking because, you know, Andres is filled with coconut trees. I know they put it in their boiled fish and they do different things with the coconut. So I would think that's where it started in Andres. But they do the real coconut milk, not that store-bought stuff. You know, the real one which you wring out in the cloth, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So the coconut milk doesn't take away from the peas and rice?
It would add to because, you know, that's the natural stuff.
Right.
I think it would add to. It's all in ratio, you know. It's how much of a certain ingredient you put in the peas and rice. If you put too much coconut milk, obviously it would predominate the flavor, but I think it's all in ratio.
And it will compromise the storage capacity.
Shelf life?
Shelf life, yeah.
No, I don't think so.
No, because people eat that rice tastes good, sir. There ain't none of that getting left behind. No. I done had some of that.
I believe that.
What I think compromises the rice. I know people now in New Providence, they put sweet pepper in the rice. Sweet pepper tend to make things go spoil quicker, you know? Yeah, that kind of thing. But
dear Nassau people, catch a tip right now.
Watch out for Nassau and Sparky McGord in New Providence.
No. Why are you talking about Nassau people? The old people in Carmichael and South Beach, y'all keep doing what y'all doing. Listen, caller, I got another caller on the line.
Yes, ma'am. All right, thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us. Caller, you're on the clock.
Yes, good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, how you do?
Good morning to your guests. You know, I got to big you up. This is a great show. You know,
good morning.
You all got my mode running water, right?
Yes, sir.
Think about Ali Seda, who used to come from Anderson in the 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bringing the cocoa plum and the coconut tart and the penny cake and all these different things. You know, I listen to you guys, right? And I so much enjoying this. You know, my grammy used to do the rice with the... I surprise people never taste rice with coconut milk in it. I just can't believe that. I know she used to do the Johnny cake. Sometimes she would put the raisin, right? Mm-hmm. And then sometimes she'd put the coconut in with the Johnny cake.
Oh, boy.
So I know about all these high-grade foods.
Mm-hmm.
And she would cook the rice, and sometimes she would granulate the conch. She had a conch grinder. She would granulate the conch mm-hmm. and put the conch in the rice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes she would put sweet pepper. I mean, you know, and see, me and my brother, and I wanted to verify that what you're talking about, the frying pan, but not cleaning the frying pan and just wiping the oil out of it and keeping it. Me and my brother had that argument because he liked to put the chemicals, like the dishwashing things, like over and over in the frying pan. He didn't understand the concept of how to preserve the skillet. But I have a question for the chef, them, since they got my mouth watering, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite dishes is really, you know, I like the stuffed crab. And I actually go crazy over the stuffed crabs. But I wanted him to explain to me, I tried the micro cooking, right? And I don't want to use oil. And so I was always trying to figure out which is the best vegetables to micro-cook, like my fish with, because I'm trying to avoid using the oil, even though I use olive and coconut oil. I'll just hang up and listen, Aaron.
I got you.
All right, tell him explain it, please.
So what he's saying is there's a whole bunch of us who love this fish, but we got to be healthier. How are we going to replicate these fish flavors with a severe reduction of oil in our pot? Or what technique can we use?
Well, what I like to use, because I like to try to cook a little healthier, I use shallow frying. And with shallow frying, it's like a saute. Just using like a teaspoon of he says coconut oil or olive oil in the pot. Mm-hmm. And just start off my fish like that. And then I incorporate the flavor slowly into it. So, you know, when the oil will actually dissipate when he eats it. It wouldn't even be a factor.
I got
in
you.
It. Yeah.
All right.
Or you can use the palm spray. They have the olive oil in the palm spray. Just hit the pan with the palm spray, sear off the fish, and then finish it in the oven.
Should I coat my fish with the palm spray as well, maybe?
No, you don't have to.
You don't have to. And let me just say this. If we have one of those old cast iron pans that's been in the oven like 10 years, he wouldn't even need no oil.
There you go.
He wouldn't even need the oil because that seasoned to the tea, that wouldn't stick, that wouldn't do nothing.
All right. I got one more caller on the clock, and then we're going to go to these texts. Caller, you're alive.
Hey, Aaron Grant.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to you all too, Chef.
Good morning, sir. Good morning.
Yeah, you know, Aaron and gentlemen, I grew up on old-fashioned Bahamian food, Grammy food, and Granada and everybody food. We never cooked well. I guess he's a chef. He got to be fancy about it. But I'd like to see an old Bahamian restaurant food where we cook the old-fashioned way. I like my old-fashioned rice with the old-fashioned cooking. I don't know if you grammy that, but tell them how to... I watch my grammy cook. And if I want to own a restaurant, it would be the old-fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
The old-fashioned crab and rice and what have you. So we need to document that because that's really our culture, Aaron, the old-fashioned way of cooking. Doughboy, I tasted Doughboy the other day. Who's put pepper in Doughboy? Y'all know I call it Doughboy, right, gentlemen? You know I call it Doughboy?
That's the crab and dough, right?
No, see, y'all don't know. Doughboy, there's one called crab and dough, but Doughboy, that's a pigeon pea, dumpling, and salt beef.
That's the original way. That's right. Yeah.
You see, that's why we need to document.
That's right.
I see why Sparky's going sometimes, because sometimes you need to educate. Take notes.
Yes,
take
but look here.
It's important for our university that we take note culturally, Aaron Green. You all talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
And we take note. That's the old Doughboy. Like I said, I tasted Doughboy the other day. No one's put pepper in Doughboy.
But I don't understand why y'all can't make a vegetarian doughboy.
That's possible.
Why y'all don't love us vegetarians enough, man? It's making me cry.
But Aaron, you could bring that out. You could bring your own vegetarian book.
Listen,
I can't be a vegetarian because I love eating food too much. I got to have it the natural Grammy way.
I got you.
I with you.
I with you too. I don't see how BMs can be vegetarian myself. That pork and them juices and stuff will come from that meat. They can't season the pork with no vegetables.
I close that. I take a guava duff. The gentleman from Canada said he baked me a guava duff.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you know what type of guava duff he baked me?
Guava paste duff.
He didn't bake me. You know the old guava. Me closer there. Y'all know how to bake the old fashioned guava duff?
You stay in the pillowcase. Make sure the pillowcase clean.
Now, Aaron Green need to send me your number. You old fashioned.
I can make sure you get
and
it.
I gotta have one or two seed knit pumpkin eater.
You restaurant together, man.
Yeah, man.
Again, teach me how to cook the old fashioned way and our university.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thank you, pumpkin eater. So, listen, I have a friend who makes vegan doughboy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds like, look here, if y'all see how these man staring at me in the studio, like I ain't even allowed to say that. And I got a Jamaican neighbor that makes vegan red pea stew,
okay.
Right, with the spindle dumplings, right? And so I have been able to satisfy my soul a little bit. But y'all ain't helping us. Y'all ain't helping us. So look here, let me get to these texts. Good day. The reason for no bone in fish in hotels. Is a fear the guests may get the bone stuck in their throat? Is there a way to soften the bone like in sardines? There probably is, but I don't even know if I want them men to say that on air.
No, you still could present it in a way whereas I see some people debone the fish, take the flay off, fry it, but still fry the bone as well.
In the oil to make the flavor.
And then put the fillets back on the bone.
Yeah. Thank
so
you.
So it'll have that presentation.
And when you see Chef Munka, give him $5 because that is a beautiful tip for amateur chefs and people who want to try to do that thing at home. Another text. Good morning, Aaron. Congratulations to Chef Alfie and Chef Munka. BHTC is so proud. That's the program you mentioned. Chef Adame Farrington led the way. Chefs like Von Ross, Chef Ellie Saunders,
yes.
The short English guy, were the best. To Chef Wayne, Cat Island Strong, and Youth Campfire, never done.
Absolutely, Adame Farrington.
That's
the foundation of BHTC. I mean, she
right
took
there.
Us away. We got the exposure. She made sure that we learned the foundational sauces. And stocks and all that kind of thing. She really pushed the Bahamian culture in terms of culinary wise.
Yeah.
A lot of chefs, you know, they indebted to her.
And so mentoring and a personal mentoring and relationship with generations of chefs is necessary for young chefs to really understand the space that they're in.
Absolutely. Persons like Charles Smith, Ellie Saunders, Chef Van Rotz, he came from Switzerland.
You even have the older chefs like Chef Michael Adley. Chef Chef Shea.
Yeah.
All of these people, they mentors. When we looked up to them like, boy, y'all do it, we could get there as
Edwin Johnson.
Edwin Johnson, all of them.
All right. So as a civil society now, we on our side need to figure out how to create or facilitate the creation of structures that allow for this type of mentorship, right? We could use the culinary world as a model, and we could grow that model in other industrial spaces as well. This is fantastic, but I got a ton more texts here. This text says, flour goes in stew, no flour goes in steam. And this one and says, no, one is with flour, and the other is without flour. Yeah. Now, so let's get to this little food thing here. Somebody made stew fish. And they didn't put any flour in it. And it was one of the best parts of stewfish I ever had. Now, maybe they put a tiny little bit of flour in it, right? But not enough for me to taste that there was flour in it. And when I asked them, what type of Chikchani magic is this in front of me? Their response was, I use okra in my
pot. That's a thickening agent.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Right? And then I had another customer say to me, I use eggplant as a thickener. in my stews and steams.
It's also a thickening agent.
Now, is that a traditional Bahamian thing? I imagine the okra may be traditional, but what about the eggplant?
No, not the eggplant. Definitely the okra.
Yeah.
But I know back in the day, during the hurricane time, I don't know if persons know about this, in Kidd Island, they would dry the fish.
Yeah.
So they'll have the dry fish, and during the hurricane, they'll rehydrate it and cook it down with okra. So you don't need a fridge for that. And so that was the thickening agent for the little steam, what we call steam.
All right.
The steam fish. So.
Okay, yeah. Wow. Because I have to admonish a number of restaurants, whose names I won't call, because that ain't fair, right? But what I found is people out here saying they selling stew fish, and it looked brown like it ain't even never met a tomato. Right, it looked brown like somebody hurt its feelings, right? And I feel like they put in too much. And then sometimes you could taste the burnt flour in it. Is there too much flour, or is flour a necessity for it to be Bahamian stew?
What I normally do, so I wouldn't burn my flour, I normally bake my flour.
Okay.
In a cast iron or in a thing. It gives you time to... Really, because on a fire, you can actually turn your back, and when you come back, it burns. So I bake it, and I stir it, bake it, and I stir it.
All right.
So when I use it, it's perfect.
But those extra brown stews, people are cheating. They use it in the kitchen bouquet.
Kitchen bouquet.
But the original Bahamian way is you brown your flour first.
Right.
Some people, they would fry it on the so-called herbs first, and then add the flour. But you brown the flour first. That's the original way.
The watery one was steam and the thicker one stew. Steam more reddish and stew more brownish. Send pumpkin eater my number also, please. I got you. Texter. So the text today and the calls should really let us know. And the powers that be, the people with money to invest in businesses, we now understand that Bahamians can grow the things we need to sustain traditional dishes. Bahamians can cook the traditional dishes, and Bahamians want to eat the traditional dishes and think they should be preserved. What is the thing that's missing here? What are the barriers to more Bahamian restaurants in country? Now, that's not necessarily a question for you guys to answer right now. That's what came to me. I got another text here. My aunt used to make jam from the sea grape. Explain to me the best. Oh, okay, that's our friend there. So you know what else we do with the sea grape? What my small company does? We make sea grape concentrate and then we make sea grape pancake syrup.
Nice.
We make a sea grape syrup to add to our savory lemonades. So like I make a thyme lemonade, and on demand I could pour a little sea grape
syrup
in it.
Because it's a tart, it adds a tart element to it,
yeah,
which is very good with sweet.
Absolutely. I got another caller on the line, guys. Caller, well, good morning.
Good morning. Is this the Aaron Green Show?
It is.
Can I speak with her, please?
You are speaking to Miss Green, ma'am.
Good morning, Miss Green. How are you this morning?
I'm good, unless you're going to admonish me for sharing the top secret food recipes.
Yes, ma'am. I am trying to see if I can get... I don't want to change anybody's business on how it works, but I am an elderly person, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm from Cat Island, too. So whoever you have right there from Cat Island...
Yes, ma'am.
Stew is different from steam. Stew is where you cook your... brown your flour nicely. Some people brown it in oil or fat, whatever, grease. Some persons just brown it in the hot pot. They keep turning it and turning it until it comes to the texture, the brown texture that they desire. All right?
Okay.
And then they take it out and work from there with their putting in then their various oils and other herbs, so forth and so on, and whatever else they're cooking, be it fish, conch, or whatever.
Yes, ma'am.
Steam in Bahamas is different. The old-fashioned, I'm talking about old-fashioned now.
Yes, ma'am.
It's different from the new steam that you all are talking about, right? Steam is your shallot or onions and your tomato or tomato paste, so forth and so on, in a short gravy that you would then put your fish or conch, whatever, in. That's the old-fashioned one.
Okay.
The new ones now, what you all are talking about, is new, all right? So all together we can be looking at two different steams and two different stews. Thank you so very much. You all have a beautiful and blessed day.
Thank you very much.
What we are looking at is the culinary definitions, but yeah. I understand. You know,
and thank you, because I've been encouraging the old folk to share their secret with us.
So yeah, so we encourage that.
We encourage the secrets to come out. So
yes, ma'am.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very, very much. So look here. I ended last week's show with the story of time. And I want to apologize to the audience because I speed that story, right? And I was talking about how time is a superfood, right? Time dilates blood vessels. So it's a treatment, or we have used it traditionally as a treatment for hypertension, high blood pressure, swelling of the joints, gout, overheating and dehydration. We also use it to induce labor, right, when at the appropriate time. And it is an upper respiratory conditioner. So all the people talking about, they have sinus, right? They make that noise with the air. Time is for upper respiratory conditioning, so the tip of your head to your throat. It is a superfood. So I was in boarding school in England for a couple of years doing my A-levels. And one year I couldn't come home, right? I mean, money, and I was a little used to the place, but I couldn't come home for the whole year. The school sent me on the Easter break to live with an African family. And I was a little apprehensive, not because they're Africans, but just because it wasn't where I wanted to be. I wanted to be home. And the first night there, this family made me smothered grouper. And they smothered the grouper in a tomato mango stew. And they put thyme in it, right? And they served it over white rice. And I think we even had a cold slaw on the side with it. And I almost cried. And they look at me, right? And you know, in my Bahamian way, they ask me, I tell them, no, this is a happy moment. I say, because this is home. This don't just taste like home. This is home, right? And I realized this is why we brought thyme over with us from West Africa. Absolutely. They were from Gambia, right, in West Africa. Mm-hmm. And so I realized it wasn't that they were cooking a dish special to me, like they did the research, you know. This is them.
Right.
And them is we.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so when the caller called in earlier about coconut milk and the introduction of coconut milk, I thought he really was going to question whether this is a Jamaican adjunct, right? Like, this is something we borrowed from Jamaicans, but it turns out that coconut milk is us.
It's us.
Right.
As well.
We've been using that.
When I was in college, we was doing some kind of food history. And it was like in New England parts of it. And they told me, cook this dish. So I looking at the dish. But I said, that's curry chicken, boy. Mm-hmm. So I say, I just throw down what I normally use, what I do. And then I really started to study that coast. When you look at the coast from the Bahamas and going straight up to New England, we cook in our food. But all of it is different variations of our mm-hmm. food because of the African trade, the slave trade.
Mm-hmm. And the gullah.
The gully people, yeah, and all of that. So somebody asked me the other day, but to work, say, why we ain't cooking more southern food? I say, all right, let's talk about southern food. What stew fish is?
Southern food?
And yellow grits.
I said, that's southern food. Yeah. I say, what steam fish is? Southern food. I say, what we do, we just take a different turn because of different Africans or different people or who they met here. They change the culture of African food, and that's it.
All right. So that leads me to think, what are the most exciting things happening on the foodie scene, right? And so for people who don't know, foodies are people who enjoy food. Like, some people enjoy going to the club and listening to their style of music. Some people enjoy going to watch the sports games. There are some of us that enjoy not just eating food, but exploring and discovering new types of food, right? What's happening on the foodie scene, and what do chefs need to grow and enhance the foodie scene? because Bahamians into food, if we could do a rating, if we could do the ratings on cable, we could see how many people watch Chopped, right? And how many people watch Food Network. We into food.
Right. I think during this pandemic, we had a big evolution of home chefs, home cooks, who have done tremendously. I never seen this since I born in the history of the Bahamas. I don't think this ever happened like this. It's so many persons doing food now. Persons doing sushi at home. You have this lady called Mega Sushi. All these different items. So it's a big evolution.
Mm-hmm.
I think the government, however, needs to coordinate it better
mm-hmm.
with the assistance of professional chefs mm-hmm. and create something similar to a Wynwood in Miami. It's like an art district. And now they have just a plethora of restaurants. And everybody who is somebody wants to be to the Wynwood. We could do a Bahamian Wynwood.
Okay, so two things.
Yes.
How do we do that and make those products accessible, right, to the average Bahamian, right? So you do a Wynwood. I'm a student. Maybe I have an after-school program and the bus passes through there, right? And I got to get something to eat. I want to know that I see when I pass through here as a young person, I could afford to be a part of this culture.
Yes, definitely. You're talking about casual food, not the fine dining kind
of
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's very casual affair. I mean, you know.
We could have both, right? We could have a balance of fine and high-end dining.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As well as the food trucks. I mean, I think in terms of the foodie scene locally, I still think we have a way to go in terms of doing things properly. In the States, when you have a food truck scene, you have a commissary, a production area that does all the production for all the food trucks so that we could control any kind of contaminants or any kind of bacteria that may happen by you preparing it. So we have a commissary. You say, okay, I need some diced onions. I'm going to make some stew kunk, you know.
And I think
they'll give you all of the raw materials for the stew kunk.
At one point in time, I was deep into the food truck culture, and I messaged somebody out of Orlando who had a couple of food trucks, and they also had a center. And they told me about their process and what they do, and food trucks could have come park their trucks, get it washed, get it clean, get it gassed up, and all the stuff. The food truck scene in the States is phenomenal, and boy, it blew my mind just getting into that culture at one point in time. But yes, it's very controlled. And I think that if we do something like a food truck scene, it could be amazing.
Yeah.
It could be amazing.
And that model really would be a support for local vendors.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So look here. I got a text here. It says, good morning, Aaron Rain. I am not Aaron Rain. I'm Aaron Green. That's cool. No. She's a cool woman. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I just so you know, I'm not Aaron Rain. And the texter wants to know, what's the best way to cook salmon? I want to try cooking salmon. Now, I will answer this before you all answer this. The best way to cook salmon is to go to Montague Dock and ask for a piece of lionfish fillet and give them the salmon to sell to somebody else. And you go home and cook the lionfish fillet. But I will let the chefs give you a recipe.
Well, it depends on, you know, your taste. But I prefer, you know, you season it. You have Cajun seasoning, you have the Old Bay seasoning. That along with some fresh herbs in terms of thyme, whatever you prefer, some lemon zest. And you would set that in the pan. Add a little butter, add a little lemon juice, squeeze over that. And you're going to have a automatic sauce because from the ajou, from the fish, it's going to come down. But I prefer my salmon medium rare, but normally Bahamians, they like it well done.
So.
And so let me tell you all, the most exquisite salmon dish I ever had, owner Mitchell Bailey, let me rephrase that, owner Mitchell Powell Bailey makes salmon fingers, like grouper fingers. She seasons them in the traditional lime and pepper and salt and then batters them and fries them, pan fries them.
Mm.
And at first I was shocked, but I actually love it. Yeah, and I know the salmon people, the chef looking at me like that. I hear you, but that don't make sense, Mr.
Yeah, salmon is a very funny fish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It can be extremely dry,
but
if you do it properly, it can be a very nice, delicate, flaky fish.
Yeah, I was surprised at how, if you do it just right, it does flake. It was absolutely divine. I was shocked. I was shocked because I thought I would need a dipping sauce, you know, right, to go with it because it don't have the au jus. But I didn't. So let me read some more of these texts. That texter would like your number also. Somebody says, stew peas and dumpling, great show, chefs. This is Chef Jeremiah. Guests want stuff like local fried fish, yes, right? And they want stuff like stuff the local fried fish with local greens, right? Like and then wrap it and tie it and then batter it and then deep fry it, right? Like it's all kind of thing you could do with the fish.
I don't understand because in the fine dining restaurants you would have on your plate, you go to certain five-star, Michelin star, three Michelin star restaurants, you're going to have the bird with the head and everything there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the presentation.
Yep.
So yeah. I think we need to stop as Bahamian chefs and watering down our heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But if the fish eye is offensive, then you can't have that fish, but that's how we do it. Yeah.
Right.
But Chef Wayne saying that I went to a restaurant in Chicago and they had the fish gills and not the fish gills, the fish belly and the jaw with all the bone. Mm-hmm. They had that on a plate with lemons and stuff on it as a dish.
Yeah.
The part what we throw away or give to somebody else to boil or steam or we wouldn't serve to, I guess. They served that as a dish. That's one of their main course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's so much potential in our local food scene with the things we can produce ourselves, right? And I often say sovereignty is valuing the things that you can create and creating the things that you want to value, mm-hmm, right? And the local food scene, we are prime. Like, we can live that right now and experience real sovereignty through our relationship with our food and the environment in which we produce it, right? And so I don't want you all to think that chefs are just people that sit in kitchens and cut up food. Chefs are thinkers, they're intellectuals, they're creatives, mm-hmm, and they are a driving force, not just in the development of our country, but in the sustaining of our culture and the growth of our culture.
And Punkinita spoke to that about the history and knowing, mm-hmm, the right way of doing it. I think I would advise the government, as a chef, to put this in the school curriculum, whereas you learn how to cook stew fish, pea soup and dumpling, all that stuff in the school system. You know, everybody knows it. Everybody loves it. It will evolve. You would have people infusing it with other cultures, mm-hmm, which is fine. But once we know the original way, the Bahamian way, I think that's the way to go.
And in terms of ensuring that Bahamians can always participate equally and equitably in the tourism product, if every student has access to an opportunity to learn the most traditional Bahamian dishes and Bahamian food culture, then at any point in time, they can easily access the tourism space. Because what do tourists come here for? But to experience what Bahamians experience
authenticity
every day. Arlington, are ready to roll out? You could play that song for me? Boy, look here. As we close the show, I can play this song so we could remember some of the most favorite things about being a Bahamian. But also, so maybe you could be inspired to add value to the things we already value. Not just to create new industry, but to create a new space in your heart for the place you are from. Arlington, you ready? You coming right now. Anyway, Chef Alpheus, you got the last word.
I just inspire everybody just to be, like I say, be a Bahamian. I told Eddie Ministers, he inspired me to be a chef through his music. And he was like, wow, we never saw that before. But his music is what inspired me to be a chef because it was Bahamian. So I wanted to do something that was Bahamian, that's cooked Bahamian food and give it to let everybody experience it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, Bahamas, have a wonderful weekend. Go find somebody who's selling something local and buy it from them, please. And eat it and share it with your family. Juju still on the tree. Kanep, mango, avocado blossoms on the tree. It's fruit time. It's fruit time. Have a great day, Bahamas. Lee Van Miller and Unleashed is up next on 96.9 FM.
You jump on the bike. Go to the landmark. Jump off the bike. Pick out one lot. Save your money every weekend and put a little bit down on your lot.
Boy, tell me, who do you love?